kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Surprisingly, no interview this episode. Oh, I know, it's a shock, but we still have plenty to talk about. Lots of reviews we got to take care of. Starting the show with our good friend, Royal Sefton. Royal, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm okay, and you can interview me if you want.
Well, what is your inspiration for joining my show?
To play games, talk about games, pretty much just live, breathe, and eat games. I think that's about it, actually.
And why do you act like such a slut?
Well, let's not slut shame. It's 2017. Okay, I'm very liberated.
Well, if you want an interview, how was your weekend? How's things going?
No, it's good. You know,
God damn it! I'm trying to make conversation, and you laugh at me. You son of a
yes.
Bitch.
Well, I laugh at everybody. Impending doom.
Oh, man. Well, I know we have a lot to talk about and take care of today, if I could say both of them at the same time. So let's kick things off with the game Dungeons 3, developed by Realmforge Studios, published by Calypso Media, released October 13th on Steam for $39.99, and then October 17th on Xbox One and PS4 for $59.99. At last, the Dungeon Lord has successfully united the forces of evil and established his dark empire. Time for the next step in his most diabolical quest, expansion. Royal, what did you think of Dungeons 3?
Well, I had talked it up before in a preview, and we spoke to that gentleman at Calypso.
Yes, Christopher. Good chat.
Yes, Christopher. Chat. Thank you. I couldn't remember his first name now.
Yes.
Yes, I am an ass. I meet people and then forget their names immediately and ask them again. That's me. I do that a lot. Great game. Still happy to gush about it. As I've played a little more of it, I would have to say that there are some things that are certainly less than perfect, but it is still all around a very fantastic RTS and a good, loving homage to that Dungeon Keeper formula. So, well,
for the people who missed the interview, what is the game?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so you begin with a bit of backstory because it's the third in the series where you are the all-conquering evil, and unfortunately your minions do an incredibly terrible job of trying to expand across the ocean. So you have to take on the role of a shadow that possesses a dark elf that's turned good. Though it's she continues to struggle with it as you proceed and you eventually possess her. Then you begin to expand out through a dungeon and use the dungeon to help conquer an overworld. So it's split between a sort of Warcraft 3 style overworld RTS and then a dungeon keeper, dungeon management game down in I need to mute for a moment. Can you hear the dad? Hold on one sec. And I'm back.
Yay.
Didn't go on about Klondike bars, did you?
No, I didn't. Not this time. So where were we?
So I was explaining what the game is, right?
Okay.
So we were talking about how you take over Thalia the Dark Elf, and you use her and little snots to create a dungeon and then expand out into the overworld, and how the game is a split between that Warcraft 3 style and the overworld. And Dungeon Keeper style in the, shall we say, underworld.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah. And as you go through the single-player campaign, you get new mechanics that sort of bust it up a little bit, so it's not just, you know, the straight, boring expansion for 20 different levels. You get new stuff thrown in there, like having to contend with day-night cycles. So during one mission, during the day, everybody's real happy and active, and at nighttime, they're completely sluggish and useless, leaving you vulnerable. So, and of course, you get to climb the tech tree as you go and unlock new things. So, you know, you start to expand out into demons and into undead, new traps, more uses of magic, all that fun stuff. So there's a lot of content in that to keep you busy.
I have also played it as well on Xbox One. I really appreciate the fact that the game is constantly switching things up. So it's not like it's just dungeon management, or it's just overworld conquering people, or it's just, you know, setting up your defenses to take care of people invading your dungeon. It's always everything, and it's never overwhelming.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that's kind of a double-edged sword about that is your unit counts. They're pretty small. You know, you start out with five little snots, and I think you get up to like 15 or something. Mm-hmm. And you, when it comes to the actual attacking henchmen that you get, the goblins, the ogres, the naga, you know, the skeletons and such, you know, you only get, I want to say 30 or 40 of them. So, you know, you have to manage, over a fairly large amount of space, not very many units. That's kind of the other side of it. It's never really overwhelming in terms of how many different units you have to manage, but you also will find yourself sometimes constrained by that limitation when it comes to expansion.
Yeah. I know I was caught off guard early in the game when, you know, I was just trying to take over the village, kill everyone, take out all the guard outposts. And it slipped my mind that, hey, despite the fact that I'm slaughtering all these people, they could come into my dungeon and destroy shit. And all of my army was on, like, the other side of the map.
Yep.
And I didn't think about it. And I was completely caught off guard. I'm lucky the game does autosave frequently. I was able to go back, split my forces, send a bunch of people back, and I had a welcoming party just hanging out at my gate. So when someone would show up, I would wreck them, and mm-hmm. then I would destroy the rest of the town, and so on and so forth. And it was so fun being the bad guy. That's what I love about this game the most, is you get to be the bad guy, you get to slaughter all the good people, and it feels good.
Definitely, definitely. And you know, you get to hear the cute fluffy bunny music I've talked about before transition into evilified music as you beat the ever-loving snot out of the enemy, you know, and all the little details in the map, like seeing these little critters running around and suddenly they're dead, or, you know, parts of the town turn into torture chambers and racks. All kinds of things just get destroyed as you walk through and conquer. So they put a lot of polish into those fine details. It's a little on the cutesy side, but it works really well.
Mm-hmm. So, which also leads to the humor, because this game is hilarious.
Yes.
Which, by the way, if you look at the trailer for the game, you could see us saying it's hilarious.
Yes.
Which is pretty goddamn cool.
It is, isn't it? Slick little SML podcast plug there, isn't it?
I know. I never thought that would happen. Like, anytime a game acknowledges us outside of, like, the bubble that is my stupid show, it just blows my mind. Like, I, you know, when I did a voice for Battle High 2 A+, it said, special thanks, the SML podcast. I'm like, oh my God, that's me.
Achievement unlocked.
So, yeah, but this game is, oh my God, it is so funny. And it just mocks you constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the worse you do, the more fun will be made of you. And a lot of different referential plugs. You know, they pick up on Warcraft humor, Game of Thrones humor, even a little No Country for Old Men joke in there, which I wasn't expecting. And a very, very chatty narrator. But if you have to restart a level, you might hear some of the same jokes recycled now and then, and you have the ability to reduce how often the narrator talks. You even turn him off altogether if that's, you know, what? Your cup of tea.
No, he was very chatty for me. I made sure to keep it there.
Yeah, I think it's better that way.
That's the way the good Lord intended it, our Calypso gods. So, yeah, I had to keep him as chatty as possible, even when I had to replay stages, because I'm an idiot and I like to be perfectionist, because Each stage has three achievements to it, one for beating it, and then two side achievements. And if I miss those, I would go back and replay it because I needed to get them, or else I feel like a failure, which the narrator knows that I am, so I have to fake it until I make it.
Yeah, gotta complete it.
It's so good, though. Rings. It is, even replaying it, it's so entertaining to just go back and be like, all right, this is what I fucked up the first time. Now I know to do it differently, take a different approach, and, you know, kill things again.
Absolutely.
So, we've been kind of, verbally blowing the game, which it deserves, but there are a couple of issues. I know right off the bat, at least on console, some of the load times could get fairly long.
Yeah, and so on my computer here at home, since I reviewed the computer version of it, I have both solid state and mechanical hard drives, which basically means I installed to the slow hard drive, and load times, it could be better, but if you have an SSD, you'll probably mitigate that.
Well, yeah, because you have an SSD.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing unbearable, but, you know, due to the fact that they have abundant auto saves and the fact that you can save manually anytime you want, I would constantly do safety saves. And if I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have done that, I'll reload it. It's just, it takes a little bit sometimes.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. You go ahead. I got derailed suddenly by intruding kiddos.
Again? Oh my God,
again,
man. Get the trank darts, man.
I'm going to have to. Master like blow darts or something.
aside from that, though, I really don't have any gripes with the game. It is just fun. It is hilarious. Maybe if I had any other gripes, I feel like the tutorials could be a little more in depth with the game. There were some actions that, you know, it just kind of assumes you know what you're doing. And some people like me can be complete idiots and have no idea what they're doing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it does take for granted that you have some experience in playing, you know, a top down RTS like this. You know, the keyboard navigation, keyboard controls and the mouse controls, and even like some of the icons off to the side of the screen when I have to click around. There's like this graduation cap that you use for training, and it almost looks inactive because it's so drab compared to the rest of it. But, you know, aside from that, it's a fairly decent interface. You just, you know, if you haven't played an RTS before, which I suppose is possible, you may not know to do some of these things or what to look for. And the tutorial, you're right, kind of glosses over that stuff. Yeah.
And you mentioned the controls. I do want to say everything controlled fairly well on the console. I didn't have any issues with getting all the commands to work. The only weirdness I saw was in some of the menus. The research menu is one example. When you go into it, you navigate the different research items with the right analog stick instead of the left.
Really?
Which I thought was odd, but when some options have multiple selections for the research, that's what you use the left stick for. So it kind of makes a bit of sense, but it's still awkward to get used to.
Yeah, I can see how that would be. Since I'm, you know, keyboard and mouse player outright, I didn't have to experience that. But, you know, since it does work on Steam, I'm curious if it is probably has full Steam controller support, I'm willing to bet you.
Well, you should have found that out, huh?
Yeah, I should have. Oops.
You bastard. You
10 demerits for House Sefton.
But overall, I got to know, $40 on Steam, $60 on console. What is your verdict on this game?
I think at $40, it's pretty much a buy it. I may have my misgivings about $60 as a buy it. And again, we've had that discussion about console being, you know, sometimes more expensive. So that may be a tough call.
Console it's a great tax, game. Yeah.
Console tax, exactly. It's an excellent game. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of cutesy. But great humor, as we've established, and the single player campaign is pretty long because you're going to spend an hour or more, depending on how much of a completionist you are, you know, if you go back and replay on each level. Plus there is multiplayer and co-op. So there's, and those are kind of, you know, really lengthy plays too. You can get a lot out of it. So in that sense, I think it's a buy it. For me, it's at $40.
I agree. The $60, the increased price on console is kind of crappy to deal with, but even at $60, I have to give it a very, very recommend to try it. It's not going to be for everybody, but for the people who know what they're getting into, they are going to love this game.
Absolutely. I mean, if you've played Dungeon Keeper, or if you're looking for something that's in that dungeon management vein, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Agreed. All right, moving on, another RPG to talk about. This one is called Realms of Arcania, developed by Crafty Studios, published by UIG Entertainment. It released October 12th on Xbox One for $39.99, is also available on PS4, and it came out a while ago on Steam. Get ready to return to Thorwall, one of the oldest cities of Aventuria. Make sure that your wits are sharpened before walking down the small alleys of Thorwall and Prem, and prepare to stop the orcish threat while creating a mighty alliance between nations. Realms of Arcania, Blade of Destiny is set to captivate the 21st century audience of new and old fans alike. As you could tell, this is pretty much a remake of an older game of the same title. The new one has the Blade of Destiny part, which I forgot earlier, but you know, I'm a human. This is a very, 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 very old school first person dungeon crawling RPG style game. It's a weird one because, mechanically the game works well, but it feels like this is something that's very much rooted in the 90s. Like, gamers of today are not going to like this game at all. The game starts, it like drops you into a town. You have a party of six people and it's like, go.
Wow. Are they six people that you create, or are they all picked for you?
They're picked for you. You can eventually like go to a tavern and get different people and rework stats, but it gives you a pre-made party and it just says go. And there's no waypoints. There's no markers of where you're supposed to go. Like, you need to pay attention when people talk. If they're like, oh, well, there's something going on in this village or in like this part of town in this building, you have to make sure that you can open your map and find out where it is. If it's not on your map yet, you got to wander around until you see it. Wow. There's not going to be a marker telling you it's there. You got to remember the name of it. Like, this is not a handholdy RPG at all. Like, wow. By any stretch of the imagination.
And this is what, 25 years ago is when the original was made, it looks like?
Something like that. I know it's a much older game originally. The new coat of paint, it's not like the freshest coat of paint. The graphics aren't, you know, they're not 2017 visuals. They look, I don't know, 2012-ish maybe? Like, mm-hmm. They're decent looking enough. They're enough to keep you going through the game, but they're not going to set the world on fire. I didn't run into any kind of nasty bugs or anything. The only glitch I had happened one time when I opened a door and it shot me up into the air because the door clipped me. But I landed, no fall damage, so rock on, I just kept going.
Sweet. No physics engine, huh? Tossing you around.
I know the game has a fairly rough reputation, but, you know, these are the kind of games I like to tackle personally where, you know, they have mixed or negative reviews, and I want to give it a fair shake. And I gotta be honest, like, this is a very, very tough game to get into. I've gotten so accustomed to games like Oblivion, Skyrim, Fallout, you know, these Bethesda RPGs, first person, walk around, explore, that have waypoints and mission logs and easy to track maps. This is not that game. It is not. And you need to make sure that you have your expectations in check when you go into this, that this game is not going to hold your hand. And if you're looking for an easy time, it's going to mock you and make you feel bad about yourself.
Nice. Going
through dungeons, everything is done in first person. Enemies are not seen on the map. They'll pretty much be random encounters. Although I have noticed they do seem to be in set specific spots. So it's not like they're random encounters. They're just invisible encounters.
Surprise.
They're premeditated, but they feel like random encounters. Once you trigger one of them, you'll go into a 3D kind of tactical style overhead battle, which is really, really interesting and complex to get into. If you can't really get the hang of it, they do have an auto battle option for lazy assholes like me, which, you know, once you initiate the auto battle, if you choose to do so, it'll ask if you're your companions are allowed to use spells or not. So, you know, if you want to keep a tighter control on who's using magic, you could just be like, no, go melee, you pussies. And then the battle just plays out and on its own. You can set the battle speed in the options. So if you just want to speed through everything, you can do that. Even on the easier difficulties, you're going to get your ass handed to you. And this isn't like newer RPGs where after a battle, you could just regain your health right away. You have to definitely manage your health, manage your inventory. You need to pay attention to what you pick up because everybody has weight limits that they carry. The more you carry, the slower your characters get. So it's not like in Skyrim where you can walk at normal speed until you pick up like an acorn too much and then you crawl. Like, it's a gradual kind of thing. This is just such a very, very old school RPG that I think it's going to turn off most of the people who might be interested in it. That's not to say it's a bad game. I enjoyed what I could play of it because this game is a bit too hardcore for me, and I love RPGs. Nice. I guess I've just been spoiled from years of RPGs getting more user-friendly and easier and more casual, that when something truly hardcore comes around, and I don't mean like hardcore violence or anything, it's just hardcore difficulty where if you're not taking your time planning things out, paying attention to literally everything that happens in the game and keeping track of everything, even with like the in-game notes that they'll have, like, they don't have words underlined like, hey, you need to pay attention to this. Like, you need to focus on the game. It's not a background kind of game. It is something that you need to set time aside and focus on just this game so that you don't get lost or get, you know, distracted by anything. It is a tough, tough game to get into. $40, I wish it were cheaper. If this were a $20 game, it would be so easy to be like, you know what, this is such a different, unique, difficult kind of RPG that if you're looking for a different experience, it's worth checking out. $40, though, it's just so, so hard to recommend it at that price. I think the people who are into these kind of games, I don't think they'll mind paying $40 for it, but the more casual audience is going to see the visuals, they're going to see the price, and they're just going to ignore it.
Yeah, that's a pretty hard sell. If you're really into the real old school games, you know, Bard's Tale, Wizardry, Draken, I could see this. Sounds like this would be, you know, their cup of tea. But even at $40, ouch.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at Steam right now to catch up on what this game's about, and it's 15 there.
Yeah, which, you know, $15, I think it's a pretty solid recommendation. If you want to check this out on Steam, I think $15 is definitely worth. I mean, it's not going to be a perfect game. You might not enjoy it. It is a very niche title. Like, that needs to be stressed here, is that this is not a casual RPG by any stretch of the imagination. $40, it is just so hard to recommend it at that price. I can't speak on how games are priced. I don't know the budgets behind things or the logistics behind how they come across this stuff. I'm just saying from my point of view, $40 is it's just too hard to recommend it at that price. If you see a sale on this game and you are ballsy enough to try a very, very retro, non-hand-holdy RPG, it's definitely something that you should keep on your radar. But I don't know, $40, it's hard to recommend at that price.
Yeah, sounds about right.
It's a shame, though, because it's, I appreciate the fact that it is so different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, so computer RPGs, I mean, they are steeped with this history of almost being like a part-time job. I mean, there's so much material out there, and, you know, having maybe even make your own maps sometimes or otherwise take notes as you play. You know, I remember doing that stuff with a lot of the older ones, but it's hard to imagine having the patience or the wherewithal to actually muscle through a game like that, even when you pretty it up, especially at that price. That's a pretty high point of entry, especially if you're new to that experience. Yeah. You know, I could see somebody who's you know, been playing computer RPGs since the 90s and even 80s, or somebody who fondly remembers this game going back and saying, holy crap, this looks a lot better. I like this. This is neat. And it kind of reminds me of the good old days, but damn.
Yeah.
You know, not going to be for everybody. I agree.
Yeah. Anyway, we've been talking about tactical games and RPG games, so let's change the pace with one more tactical RPG on computer. Divinity
yes.
Original Sin 2, developed and published by Larian Studios, it released September 14th on Steam for $44.99. The Divine is dead, the Void approaches, and the powers lying dormant within you are soon to awaken. The battle for divinity has begun. Choose wisely and trust sparingly. Darkness lurks within every heart.
Yes.
Royal, tell me about Divinity Original Sin 2, because I have heard nothing but praise about this game.
Yeah, that's about what you're going to get from me too, man. Okay, it's awesome. Review over. No, it is a fantastic, excellent, amazing, long, potentially very difficult and unforgiving game. Super well written. I feel my duty as a reviewer is remiss only in that I am not familiar with the first one, and now I'm going to go buy it and play it.
Yeah, you should. I know the first game was really, really good. The first one eventually came to consoles. I'm hoping this one will as well, but I'm sure it's a process. So
Yeah, almost certainly. But it's such a great game. And part of the reason I want to go back and play the first one is because it has a very steep lore. I mean, there's a lot of material to go through. Understanding, the role of elves, dwarves, and the undead, it's not straight Tolkien. It does a few things very differently than I was anticipating. And, you know, the turn-based combat is very deep, and you can be under level, but if your strategy is solid, you could very well come out a winner on some very tough battles, or you may be replaying the same battle multiple times to get a good outcome, because this game is it takes no prisoners, man. It comes with four difficulty settings, and I'm playing on Classic, which is the second. There's one that's basically all storyline, or the emphasis is on, I want to play it for the story. I'm not so worried about enjoying deep tactical combat, so hold my hand a bit. Classic mode's supposed to be a good balance where, you know, you may find the fights a little difficult, and that's where the meat and potatoes of the game's challenge might be for you, between that and resource management. And then as you go up, it gets to the point where there's basically the nightmare difficulty, where you have one save file, and if your party gets wiped out, it deletes your save file.
Oh,
and says,
man.
And says, fuck you, go back to the beginning now. Yeah.
Oh, man.
That is the thing. That is the thing. And so it's definitely a game that I think, you know, when you were reviewing Realms of Arcania, Blade of Destiny, you know, we talked about how there's that sort of barrier to entry, that high difficulty level. Well, the thing that Divinity Original Sin 2 really seems to get right by offering those different difficulty levels is you can accommodate folks who want a hardcore game, or you can get them introduced to CRPGs that have, you know, incredibly long play times, deep stories, great tactical combat without actually scaring them off. And I think that's kind of what makes this game so widely popular.
Yeah, the fact that it has a mini map and like objective markers and a quest log, and it's just more informative. This is the stuff that we talked about in the Arcania review, of just changes to the genre that have been added over the years to make things more welcoming and more casual friendly.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that's part of what makes the game so much fun to play. You know, if we want that old school flavor, yeah, we can take off some of those assists and make it harder. But I tell you what, I mean, I swear by having a world map, because there's so much to explore. And what's a real kick, I think, is basically you will spend... Well, let's not give too much away. So you are on a ship. You have been collared to restrict your use of source. You don't have the ability to use sorcery. And the ship is besieged by a sorcerer who releases herself from her collar. And you shipwreck, and you can make some choices on the ship as to what happens next. But you shipwreck on the island you were originally setting sail for in the first place. It's a place called Fort Joy. And Fort Joy is where all of these bound sorcerers that cannot use their source magic are left. in the care of that's generous. You know, under watch of these magisters who are trying to purge sorcery from the world because they're blaming them for the rise of the void woke and these evils from a void dimension, as I understand so far. And anybody who knows the game better than I do, and I get it wrong, I apologize in advance. There may be some stuff I still don't quite get completely, but. You know, once you're there on this island on Fort Joy, you know, you're several hours into the game as you start to put together your party from the other survivors of the shipwreck, and you try to find your way off the island. Basically, getting off the island, which is itself a 10, 15, 20 hour endeavor, is your tutorial.
Oh my God.
That is how deep this game gets. I mean,
I heard it was huge, but holy shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And part of the reason is because there's so much to explore. There's so much to do. There are optional quests, and they make callbacks or can influence the turn of other quests. Like there's somebody that you can free who gives you a hand elsewhere in a mostly unsuspected way. It was a brilliant surprise. Loved it. There are lots of little hidden areas and groves and alcoves that take advantage of that three-quarter perspective and make them a little hard to see on the screen. But if you go sniffing around, you can find your way to these other corners of the map that have their own little stories or subplots, or maybe just some treasure or a corpse that you want to check out, see what they left on their person when they died. It's really a lot of fun, and there's just so much to do in that game. That to me, it's almost like it's an investment, and at $45, it's a good investment because you get so much for your money out of this game, and you can go back and play it through on a harder difficulty level, or you can pick. Well, one of the things I kind of glossed over is when you get set up, you can choose your character out of a list of characters that already have their own origin stories written, or you can create your own character. And those characters of the origin stories happen to also be survivors from the shipwreck that can join your party, and they still have their stories play out in the game. So, you know, it's very convoluted. I don't mean that in a bad way, but you keep a journal and you can see all these different quest lines, and it is just fascinating to follow. So much good writing that went into this.
Wow. So I'm hearing all good. Is there anything bad about this game? Because I don't think I've heard any negatives from anybody at all.
Well, so I conferred with a friend who has been playing the game longer than I have, because I understand it's been in early access for a while. And I understand that the publisher's really, really receptive to feedback and is quick to fix bugs. And I've heard about a bug where it essentially triggers a series of different quests all at one time. And it's a little disorienting to have six different quest lines just open up at once. Not really know why. Minor bug. I have not run into any bugs of my own. I would say, yeah, if there's really anything that I would consider a criticism, and maybe this is my own stupid fault for starting on the second difficulty level, some of those fights can be very punishing, and it's also real picky about its autosave feature. The autosave feature almost kind of like Mickey Mouse's the game for you, because if it goes into autosave, you know immediately shit's about to go down. You are going to walk three more tiles, and then you're going to be in a fight.
Oh, man.
And if, on the other hand, you already have been to these areas, or if it's a fight that you can see coming from a distance, it might not autosave. And I went through two fights, completely botched a third, and then checked my save files, and I had to redo all of those fights again because it didn't autosave on those periods when I was kind of getting accustomed to or used to that being a thing, that I would figure every time I go into a fight, I get an autosave. I can revert if it goes badly. No, I had to lose some progress just to go back and redo them again, which is a little discouraging. Yeah. And one of the things that the game doesn't really tell you much about, but you pick up through attrition, so maybe I'm just giving out a tip here. Just because you enter a battle with your party clustered together, it doesn't have to be that way. You can sneak your characters around or position them elsewhere before you initiate the fight, and that can make all the difference in whether you're successful. So there is a good amount of trial and error, and that play style might not work for everybody. If you really enjoy your games to be a little more improvisational, this probably isn't your cup of tea. But, you know, again, turn-based tactical combat, I'd expect you would want to, you know, the gameplay would be hinged on getting a grasp on what strategy works best, how to position your troops or your party. You know, taking all those things into consideration, this game does that stuff excellently.
Cool. So I got to know, $45, what is your verdict on Divinity Original Sin 2?
Buy it.
I am, I, Like, everyone knows I'm not a fan of PC gaming, and we all know my computer is awful, and I'm still so tempted to grab this game because I've heard so much good about it. But I'm gonna hold out hope it comes to console like the first one did, because I loved the first on console.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and it is just a fantastic game. I can't recommend it enough. You know, and I haven't even tried to approach this, but I understand there are co-op features and multiplayer features associated with the game too, which just increases, you know, the value of the game as far as I'm concerned. And I mean, spec-wise, yeah, it's probably going to be, it's not the most demanding title out there. But you will definitely need to have a proper graphics card or graphics accelerator if you're using a laptop to really play it. It's not going to work with integrated graphics. So yeah, there is a little bit of a spec bar to entry there. So if there is a console port of this later, I think everybody's in for a treat that, you know, doesn't have a PC to play.
Nice. And then if people out there have a couple extra bucks and you want something more than just the game, they have a Divine Edition for $60 that includes digital art books, digital map, digital soundtrack, and art pack. And then they also have a nice bundle for $90 that includes Divinity, the Divine Edition upgrade, the original Divinity Sin, as well as Beyond Divinity, Divine Divinity, and Divinity 2 Developer's Cut. So if you want everything, you can get everything.
Yeah, and plan to devote hundreds of hours to it, too. How much I've played and I'm not even done with the game is an indication. That is massive.
Yeah, but looking back at everything, three drastically different RPGs, and I was thinking, like, Divinity Original Sin 2 is like Forza Horizon 3 in that it's shiny, it's pretty, it seems to do everything right. Realms of Arcania is like Project Cars 1 without any of the assists on, in that it is just crazy difficult, but there's still a solid foundation underneath it. Mm-hmm. And then Dungeons 3 is just Burnout Paradise, where you get to fucking wreck everything.
Yeah, I would say that's about right.
But overall, it's, you know, still a solid lineup for RPG fans out there.
Yes, yes, I don't think you'd go wrong. No way, this is awesome.
All right, well, Royal, thank you so much for chatting games with me. We have plenty more reviews to come. Do you have any final words?
Oh, no, I never do.
All right, moving on. We are bringing in our good friend Pernell Vaughn to talk about a couple of games. Pernell, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing pretty squarely, you know. It's been a day, but I had pizza.
Just square? Yeah.
Well, it's been a little circular, too. I mean, there were some circles involved.
I didn't know if there was any Enix on there as well.
Nah, no Enix. This is pre-Enix. Enix is doing its own thing today.
So your day was square soft.
Yes, it was pure square soft. My day was Final Fantasy VI.
By the way, we had some breaking news come in. Happy birthday, Pernell.
Oh, hush your fuss. No one needs to know such details, but thank you very much.
What was it? You turned 25 this week?
I fucking wish, man. I got gray hairs forming from my gray hairs.
Dude, same here, man. I have to shave everything just to make it look like I'm not in my mid-50s.
Right? And then the worst part of it is, like, all the gray hair I am growing, none of it's from my forehead. None of it's coming off of my head. I'm bald as fuck, and I hate it. It's like that old, like one of those like freaking like old people that I may as well have a damn walker rolling around, but I hide it by the fact that I like electronic entertainment.
See,
I'm not old. Look at this. I have a 3DS.
I've had gray showing up on the side of my head. I've had some gray showing up in my beard and my mustache. The moment I see gray on my balls, I'm just shooting myself.
It's time to go.
That's the end. It's like, put me out of my misery.
Testicular gratum.
Just end it. End it all.
Why can't I just not get grays? Let them go.
Speaking of classic electronic gaming goodness, the first game you're here to talk about today is called Raiden 5 Director's Cut, developed by Moss, published by UFO Interactive, released October 10th on the PS4 for $34.99. The original version is currently also available on Xbox One as well. The original Bullet Hell is back. Arcade hit Raiden first left its mark on the shooting genre 25 years ago. The easy-to-learn, hard-to-master series comes to the PS4 in the most modern and advanced form yet. Join the war for Earth's future, where the tide of battle holds constant surprises. Purnell, tell me about Raiden 5.
So Raiden 5, just to give some forethought to people here, I am familiar with the Raiden series, and I'm sure I've played a few back in the day, but they never left quite an impression, so I can't be like, I'm a Raiden enthusiast, and I was waiting for this game, because that would be a lie. But I was curious to see how this game turned out, so I was all about doing the review proper, and I am glad I did, because this game is legit. This is a really cool game. First and foremost, what hits you immediately is the OST. It's almost like they paid someone money to do it, because it's very much enjoyable, and it's not a write-off track, because, I mean, it's a good shooter, so they could have easily gone just phoned in, like, some generic, like, butt rock, or like some beep, 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 like electronical beeps or whatever, and it'd have been fine. But they actually have some quality jams on this game. I listened to them in my car. Where they did screw up, though it's a small screw up, not important, there's a story mode in the game. And while you're playing it, there's like a group of people talking in the corner, and the voices they don't overdo the music, but they kind of blend into it. And their dialogue is so asinine that they shouldn't even be talking. There's a point where the guy, like one of your commanders, is like, we got to find some coffee beans while we're down here shooting these guys. Like, why is this topic in the game? Why does this exist? It's all needless, pointless banter. But now that's out of the way, I think you can actually turn that off. So you might want to do that.
Yeah, when I covered this one on Xbox way, way back when it first launched, this is one of the very few games that I immediately turned off subtitles.
Yes, because they pop up at the top of the screen blocking ships and crap.
The story made no sense. There was just talking and words popping up, and I'm like, I have shit that I need to shoot, so I'm going to focus on that instead of listening to you.
It's like they just had recorded two people having a conversation, but then swapped out like every noun with something that would be related to the story. Like, so after we get to the third district, we got to stop over and get some munitions while we head north. Like, God, Jesus, like, I'm positive that's almost what they did. It's just general conversation, but they slapped, they changed out nouns for story-related nouns. That's all they did.
It's like when they talk about sports on TV and the people just cover their mouths. It'd be like, oh, did you see the Super Bowl between Pittsburgh and Seattle?
Yes, I did. Let me stop. But this game is like, as long as you can ignore the story and the asinine dialogue, though I guess you might want to see it early just to laugh at it for a few minutes. But once you get past that, you have some quality shooter action going on here. So there's a story mode that consists of about 8 or 9 missions, and those missions are kind of like broken off into alternating paths. Now, I'm not going to lie, I have no clue what determines which path you end up on, but they exist. So once you're playing the game, you might just start learning about certain things. And as you realize, hey, I'm on stage 4C now instead of 4B. And I believe that activates different patterns of enemy formations. And it's probably slightly more difficult based on which path you're on, because it's probably related to like your skill level, how well you did on the stage. But so aside from that, so there's 8 or 9 stages in the game. And when you start up the story mode, you have to select 3 different weapons, a Vulcan type weapon, which is pretty much your hold down the button and spray bullets everywhere weapon. And there's your laser weapon, which is a piercing beam. And then there's a plasma weapon that gets just fucking weird. There's like plasma balls that like shoot outward in two directions and catch things and send like plasma waves through them. And the weapons themselves are all pretty creative. Like of the Vulcan type, there's 3 Vulcan weapons. And the one I like the most is called the Swing Vulcan, where it sprays bullets out ahead. But as you fly left and right, the bullets swing based on your flight pattern. Hmm. So you're kind of like sending waves of bullets out. And then my favorite laser, which is very unique for this type of game, as far as I'm concerned, is called the Reflect Laser. And what it is, when you press the gun button, you send a crystal out ahead. And as you're holding the button, you'll send a straight laser out. And as long as it's shooting at the crystal will reflect the laser outward into like multiple directions, and it will spin. So as long as you're holding it down and you're able to keep contacting that crystal, you can ultimately hit anything on the screen. But it's hard to maintain focus on the laser because you got to dodge bullets and crap. But it's such an awesome concept for a weapon that I comment almost use it exclusively throughout my plays. I got like level 10 multiple times. Oh, wow. And then there's like the plasma weapon. My favorite plasma weapon was called the Catch Plasma, where two plasma orbs or more if you level it up would grab enemies and then constantly send pulse waves of plasma energy at them doing damage. So it was like kind of like a grip weapon. So it's just, there's a lot of different weapon types here, total of 9, which all could be leveled up 10 different levels, which makes them stronger and changes the way they actually function. So you got a lot of play as far as weapon selection goes.
See, then, I was all about the bend plasma because that fucker seemed to hit everything.
Yeah, like I think like all the lasers. What was the bend plasma?
That's the one where it shoots out like a straight line and then it curves around to hit every enemy that shows up.
I like the sound of that too.
If you haven't used it, try it. I loved that one.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get down to business then because I do enjoy the weapons I have here are already good. That's probably why I have these. I'm like, I find things I like. I'm like, why change any damn thing else? Shit. But that stuff in itself is awesome, but you also have to choose a ship with which to actually use these guns. And there are 3 different ships in the game which have stats for power, speed, and defense. So there's no, there's like a couple of different space games where you can press a button to alter your speed to your liking. Doesn't exist in this game. You have to choose a ship that flies at the speed you want and stick with it, and then you have to take whatever different differentials you get from power and defense to make up for it and just accept it. So in addition to, based on all that stuff already, I already described that, there's also another really weird function in this game called the cheer.
Hell and yeah, the cheer.
It is so damn wonky, but I don't want to turn it off because of just how it still helps. It's just wonky. So the way cheer call works is as you play the game, you might hit a milestone. And whenever you hit a milestone, the game will notify you, and then it sends that notification out to the network at large. And that is happening for other players, too. Every time a player's notification pops up on your screen, you can press a button. Like, it'll say, like, collected 100 medals or beat a boss while taking damage. This is something that someone else did in the network. You press a button called the cheer button, and it increases a gauge ever so slightly. And it also adds a tick to that player's favoritism, I'll call it. So once your cheer gauge is filled from constantly cheering people on, you can press the cheer call button, and then you will summon the person that you cheered on the most to come in and help you with like a temporary super attack. And it can be exploited to high holy hell because you can cheer people on while the game is paused,
mm-hmm.
which is hilarious, though. You're not going to do that, though, listener, because why would you? It takes you out of the action.
Yeah, but you could if cheap, you wanted to. Are you?
Why would you do that shit?
I just like the fact that it feels more involved. There, you know, everyone in the world is playing this game. And if there's a lot of people playing, you're going to get a lot of cheer notifications. And if there's a lot of people playing, when you do something good, a lot of other people are going to cheer for you.
Mm-hmm.
So the more people playing, the better it is for everybody.
And just for the record, for those listening, they're like, oh, I don't want that to interfere with my expert play style. Like, well, it doesn't block the view of the screen, so it's not going to reflect on how you play the game. And you technically don't have to cheer at all. You can just let the game run, and people can keep cheering for you, and you cheer for nobody.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally fine. Or you can just turn the feature off entirely and never deal with any of it. But why would you do that? It's a feature in the game. So aside from the base story mode of the game, and there's an arcade mode also where you can kind of just like pick a level you want to play and just run through it. There's also a kind of cool mission mode, I would call it. And the way the mission mode works, like boss mission, is I don't quite know how you unlock them all, but there are 5 ranks, and each rank has a series of missions on them. And the missions are broken down by things like difficulty, like how much hit points the boss has, how many bombs you get. Sometimes they make you choose a specific ship. They sometimes make you choose specific weapons at a specific level. They give you time limits and all kinds of stuff. Just a bunch of different things that limiters or limitations on you doing this, being the boss. And it's just something fun to do. You fight the bosses. You get a best time to see how you rank up against everybody else that's playing this game. And it's just one more thing for a shooterholic to engage in to feel like they're actually kicking ass and beating other players. And there's a gallery mode too, but I don't care about that. but you might, in which case you open up photos of different characters or scenes from the game, like different ships or sketches, things of that nature. Again, I have no clue how you unlock gallery images. I'm going to assume it's probably based on things like how much cheer you put out, how much cheer you cheer for, you know, how many levels you beat. And it doesn't think there's all that much to get. Like, just from the amount I played, I've unlocked 76% of them.
Nice.
And it's like, hey, that's just from doping around, so. you know, that I was kicking ass. But that's
so I guess the big question is, $35, what is your verdict on this? And we have to take into consideration the fact that this is a Japanese shmup when it comes to pricing.
Wait, this is only $35?
Yes, $35 digital. Or they're also doing a physical version for $40 that includes a soundtrack disc.
Oh, yeah, that's worth it. That soundtrack is bossa nova. Considering that this game is actually cheaper than the last one I reviewed, which, while good, I think actually had less than this game does as far as, like, play goes. Well, character-wise, it had more, but stages and all that, this game has more than that. I feel like there's definitely value to this. I would buy it.
Nice. I loved it on Xbox. I'm thrilled to see it on more platforms so more people could get it. I am jealous about the fact that you guys on PS4 can get a soundtrack disc with it, because the import Xbox version does not have that, and Xbox was digital only in the U.S.
Now, is it a full OST, or is it like one of those select OSTs?
Ah, fuck if I know. It's on Amazon. Let's see. Include soundtrack CD. That's what Amazon tells. 22 track.
Oh, that's probably the whole thing then, because there can't be that many tracks on here. It's a shooter. It's like one level per one track per stage. Each boss has its own track, and then the menus, and the ending, and the opening. So yeah, 22 sounds about right.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right, next game to talk about is called Super Pong Trick Shot, developed by Sims, published by Star Sign. It released October 19th on the Switch for $4.99. Try throwing a ball across a room filled with moving platforms and obstacles and into a cup. Test your throwing skills across 80 challenges with missions and submission objectives, such as making the ball bounce twice or using at least 75% power. Use the L stick for traditional controls or the more energetic motion controls that simulate throwing a ball. This is basically like beer pong style game, where it's on the surface, it looks like a 2D puzzle game where there's a cup, and then you have to throw a ball, and you have to get it in the cup. Physics-based puzzles.
I had to say it. Very
simple in description, but once you actually get to the gameplay, like, this game surprised the hell out of me with not just how fun it was, but how much content there was in the game. The 80 levels is clearly a lot of stages. Each stage also has a main mission, which is usually, like, get one ball in the white cup, or get three balls in the white cup, whatever it is. And then there will be three additional extra missions to get, you know, like the use X amount of power or shoot it at a certain angle. So there's plenty of replayability in going back and trying to get all of the stars in each stage, which I got very addicted to because I'm that kind of guy.
Mm.
While on the surface, it looks like a 2D game, there is camera control, which allows you to rotate left, right, spin it all around in a circle, look up and down. Where in the beginning, that's not going to matter much, because what you see is what you get. But then you'll start seeing areas of like, how the fuck am I supposed to throw this ball into the cup? You move the camera and you realize that wall that's right in front of you has a giant hole in the middle.
Huh.
Or like a wall that's there is just a fake wall, and there's only like one column of bricks there where the other side is completely open. So where you thought you couldn't throw it, you really can. There's different block types in there, like metal ones, which make them bounce harder or, you know, easier. They have like honey ones or sticky ones that just stop the ball immediately. There are movable blocks where there will also be a button on the map that you'll have to hit the button with a ball, and then the blocks will move and you'll have to figure out how to get the ball into the cup with ricochets or... You know, there's a lot of stages where it's like one of the missions will be like, get the ball in the cup without any bounces. So you have to figure out the perfect angle to chuck the ball up in the air and have it drop straight down into the cup. It gets addictive, man. It's really solid.
I like the sound of this game, actually.
Dude, it surprised the hell out of me. This was something where if you see it in the store, I think a lot of people are going to ignore it because they'll be like, well, it's just like bounce a ball. After playing it for a couple of hours, yes, hours, because I couldn't put this game down, I have become a believer in this game. I wish it had a more inventive name so that it stuck out a bit better. It wasn't, it just feels like such a generic name, Super Pong Trick Shot.
They were feeling a little lazy with it.
Yeah. It has kind of a generic name. It has a low price. So I'm worried people are going to just pass on this thinking it's just going to be shovelware, but it's a legit physics puzzle game. And on top of that, there's like four different control methods in the game. One is, you know, using a controller like normal. One is using a Joy-Con like normal. Then they have motion controls where you use the Joy-Con and hold a button and like make a throwing motion to throw the ball.
Hmm.
Which didn't work too well for me, but I could see the enjoyment there. And then there's also touchscreen controls where you just tap on the screen and flick it in a direction. It felt like the touch controls were good in practice, or good in theory, but in practice they didn't really work that well. I had the best results just going with standard controls, aiming up and down, pressing the button to start the power gauge, and then pressing it again to stop the power gauge. My one gripe with the power gauge is, you know, in like Hot Shots Golf or stuff like that, you get up to 100 and then it starts to count back down.
Yeah, so like you can go up and down, you can ultimately time it at the time that's best for you without feeling pressured.
Yeah, with this one, once it hits 100, it goes back to 1.
Wait, what?
So you try like, hitting it like on 100 and you hit it a hair too late and you press it on a 1 and the ball just drops in front of you.
Oh, so it's maybe make it harsher if you go for that perfect shot, because if you go for perfect and odd shots, you'll get like, oh crap, I got a 97 instead. Like this guy, like, nope. It's all or nothing jump.
It goes all the way up and then it starts back at the beginning, all the way up, back at the beginning, all the way up, instead of like the bounce up, down, up, down. That was very hard for me to get used to when going for a full power shot and then getting a 1 or a 2 and being like, motherfucker. Which, you know, you get 15 balls per stage, so they're very generous with how many attempts you get, but there's still times where it's like, okay, I got this one tough star. Now I have to actually finish the stage, and I don't know if I have enough balls to finish. And I've lost a couple of stages like that, which hurt my soul, and then I would replay it and keep going and going and going.
At that point, you just have to grow some more. Grow some balls, man.
Like I said, this game surprised the hell out of me. I was not expecting to become this addicted and have this much fun with it. When I first fired it up, it was right before football came on Sunday. I'm like, well, I'll play this for like half hour until the game comes on. I went through like an entire football game not paying attention and just playing this on my Switch until the batteries died.
So it definitely did the job.
For $5, this is cheap enough to give it a fuck it, why not? But this game is getting a buy it. This game, oh, for shit. $5, buy this game. Ignore the fact that it feels on the surface like it's kind of generic, because underneath, this is a solid, solid physics puzzle game. Very addictive. Lot of content in there for just $5, so buy it. Good stuff.
Get on it. Get up on it.
And then moving on, another $5 game. This one is Spiral Splatter, developed by Neon Chimp Games, published by Sometimes You. It released October 20th on PS4 and Vita for $4.99, also available on Steam for $2.99. Spiral Splatter is a brain-bending arcade puzzle game that will push your hand-eye coordination to the limit with non-stop mind-boggling puzzles. What is Spiral Splatter?
Frustrating as shit. That's what it is. Oh, I gotta talk about it too. Oh,
yeah, that would help.
So, Spiral Splatter is a puzzle game. I'm sure we've all played puzzle games like it. It's like, it's that game like Tricky Stick or Wobble Stick. I don't know. You'll know when I say it though. So basically the idea is that you are controlling a white orb and you have to maneuver it through a series of tubes to get to the exit of the stage. So it's the one internet? Into the other. Yes. You have to navigate the actual interwebs. And if you, and if you fail, all of your personal information will be stolen. But if you succeed, you can try again, because that's what hell is like. So you get to basically keep trying to do this. And if you touch the sides while you're trying to move this orb out, your orb will splatter, hence the title. And you have to start again. So there are a series of about, I want to say, 10 worlds. Each world has approximately 8 stages. And you unlock each world by acquiring a certain number of stars. Stars are earned by beating each stage in a certain amount of time. They don't penalize you for taking for dying, which is a very great thing, because if they did, I would kill myself. But they do kind of have a weird, like, double standard here. So what it does is, like, if you start a level and you die before you reach any of the checkpoints on the stage, you start again. But if you reach a checkpoint and then die, the clock doesn't stop. So you basically, if you're the type that just keeps trying until you get it right and you die after a checkpoint, you're basically having to start push pause and restart the entire level. And there's no option that I could see to turn checkpoints off, which is what I would personally do until I just can't take it anymore and turn them back on. But even with that in mind, this game would be enjoyable and less frustrating if not for one thing. And this is something that's definitely going to be on a person-by-person basis, but it drove me fucking crazy. And that is that every time you inched close to the wall, the screen will flash red, like an annoying flash of red, and it'll go, eh, eh, eh. And that might not sound like much. But considering the fact that based on how you play this game, and if you're going for these high scores, you're going to be hugging the shit out of some walls. You're going to be looking at that wall in the eye and saying, look here, buddy, you're not the boss of me, which unfortunately means the wall's going to be yelling back at you the entire time, giving you a seizure. This game drove me goddamn nuts with this crap. I was like, I want to enjoy you. I want to enjoy you. And I started feeling like I was getting a headache from all the red flashing. It was driving me crazy, which is annoying because otherwise I was having fun with the game. Because I'm the type of guy, I like simple puzzlers. I like when the game's like, here's a task, do it, and if you succeed in the time limit, you get a high rank. I like games like that. Yeah. But that red flashing and that annoying pulsating sound, it gave me a literal headache. So, and there was no option to turn it off, which I went to the options main screen hoping to find that. It gives you no such thing. The only option it gives you is turn the music off, which may affect the warning sound, but it wouldn't affect the red flashing.
No. See, so I didn't have an issue with the warning sound because I played it muted.
Ah, so that would be a thing that would save you. But the red was still there, though, right?
The red was still there, but it didn't bother me too much. It was just kind of like a, hey, watch how close you are. My biggest gripe with the game, at least because we played it on the Vita, my biggest gripe was I didn't think the Vita's analog stick was precise enough. It felt like I would tilt slowly in a direction and I would just go flying towards a wall.
There, I can see that.
I don't think there was enough precision possible with the Vita analog nub, at least in my eyes.
Well, keep in mind, though, just to make sure that if I'm not mistaken, the speed, the only speed adjustment you could do was the X button. Like if you didn't hit X, you would just move forward when you press forward. Mm-hmm. And then if you hit the X button, it would just speed forward when you press forward. So, like, you couldn't do, like, the slowly inching concept. All you can really work with is the directions that you're going in, which I agree in that regard. The Vita controller was still kind of iffy for saying, I want to go at this exact angle down this corridor. It was more like adjust. As like, it's like almost like going right down. So just going diagonally down. So, but it's hard to say if it was personally me or if it was actually the controller, but it felt like the controller. But I don't want to make a definitive statement in the event that it actually ended up being me, because I can get a little twitchy. But I felt like it was more so the controller than me, which is something I rarely say. No. But it's one of those, I can't recommend the game. It could be tried. I'm not going to tell someone not to try the game because it's got good core. It's got a good core. It's just, I don't want to tell somebody to buy a seizure when they don't have to. So that's why I'm going to give it a try. If the core was crap, I would say just ignore it entirely. But it had a good enough core that I don't want to tell people to outright not purchase this game. So.
Yeah. My recommendation is if you are someone out there who has ever heard of the game Irritating Stick on the PlayStation.
That's the name. Irritating Stick. I knew it was something like that.
Yep. If you've heard of Irritating Stick and hearing those words doesn't immediately make you like shiver in horror at having to relive that game, you'll want to buy this game. Everyone else, I agree, it's a try. It's only $5, so it could even be a fuck it, why not?
That's another game I remembered. It was a game called like Kuru Rin Rin.
Yeah.
It was like a Japanese game for the DS.
Yeah, where like the character or whatever like spun in a circle the whole time and you had to like bounce the right way. It was such a weird game.
Yeah, it was the avoid the walls concept, but your thing constantly moved as you moved it. Mm-hmm. Just to make one more layer of bullshit.
If you're a fan of Kururururin or Irritating Stick or Spiral Splatter, another game to check out is called Roundabout, which...
Oh, the limo!
Yep.
That game is awesome. It has that weird story mode.
Yep. And funny enough, Danny Baranowski is one of the people in that game as a passenger.
Really?
Yeah, which I thought was hilarious.
Maybe he did some...
Huh? The one time he was on the show, I actually used an image from the game of him in the limo as the YouTube picture for the episode.
Sweet. That's freaking awesome. Yeah. Dude, that guy, I love his jam, Something Fierce, too, so all the more. So.
Indeed. But, Pernell, thank you so much for joining and talking about these games with me. Any final thoughts or final words?
Seizures are a very serious deal, people. They are not to be joked about. If you know someone who suffers from them, please contact a medical professional to seek assistance on how to deal with it.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Three Souls, developed and published by Red Column. The complete game released October 5th on the Wii U for $3.90, so it's a cheap one, although the first chapter was available back in July of 2016, so the whole thing is finally here. Discover the world of Mustland with Nelisa, No Face, and Nidimon, I think, in the sad cells of Moon Prison, the colorful streets of Sleepless City, and the drab walls of Paper Thin Farm with Three Souls. In this 2D puzzle platformer, players must utilize the unique features of the Wii U gamepad to solve puzzles and the touchscreen to glimpse into the thoughts and feelings residing within the character's soul. We have our friend Chris Taylor covering this one. Chris, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic.
I just realized over the course of recording all of these reviews, I'll ask some people, how are you doing today? And some people, how are you doing tonight? And there's no consistency at all.
Well, yeah, it is night here. For that, for sure.
So fun for the listeners to go back and try to decipher when I recorded certain reviews.
Or if they're just listening, then this will appeal more to people who are listening to the podcast at night.
Very true.
Because they'll be like, these guys know what's up. These guys understand the PM and some of the AM.
I can't wait, because I think the one after this I said today. I guess we'll find out.
The next one, you should say tomorrow.
How are you doing tomorrow? Chris, how are you doing yesterday?
I will have been fine.
Nice. So Fantastic. Tell me about Three Souls. What is this game?
Okay, so Three Souls is... I really need to write down the different types of platform or puzzle games that are available. Because I do silhouette puzzle games, which are like, you know, the one person trying to get around a silhouette of buzzsaws for whatever reason. And, you know, you got the high-speed, action-y, like, Runbow-style platformer where you're racing the clock and things like that. I don't know. And this one is an action platformer. It's very much puzzle. It's you know, it's one of those kind of games where it's like, I guess, like VVVVVV, where... You'll expect to die many, many times. So you just have to get that whole guilt complex about killing these likable and complicated characters, like, immediately. Just turn on total sociopath mode and try to figure out these puzzles. It's one of those, you get three hits, from a regular thing to die, but most things can kill you in one hit, including flowers. It has security flowers. That's a thing, but I'm getting ahead of myself. So, the story of Three Souls is roughly that, of course, the world is Mustland, and it's kind of this bizarre, dystopian Orwellian future where there's some, there's rules to be followed. And if you don't follow the rules, you lose your mask. And these characters are basically a soul that, I suppose, upon which a ninja outfit has been loosely hung and then a mask affixed, and the mask is what keeps the soul in the garment, or the body or whatever. It seems to be just a garment, really. But, cause they like collapse Obi-Wan Kenobi style if you die. Spoilers. Spoilers for people who haven't seen Star Wars yet. Yeah, the story follows these souls, and despite the fact that they appear to be less human than not, this is one of the, like, as far as the more indie budget, like, sort of puzzle platform kind of games, this one to me has the most in-depth, like, character development and like character backgrounds. And literally you like collect memories, which are voice acted out on the gamepad. And so you kind of really get to know your three different people. Well, now it's three different people. I think they released the one and had that for a while. And then the two were kind of promised later. And now those all three are together and the three stories intertwine. So that's really good. In fact, the third character, like, directly deals with the first character. So it's the whole thing is a story done through three perspectives, which is really cool, I think. Good storytelling for a game, that's like more on the indie side. But yeah, as far as the actual gameplay goes, this is, well, of course when you offered it to me, you were like, it's on the Wii U for whatever reason. And, I was like, okay. And then once I played it, I realized that it is definitely on the Wii U for a reason. It uses probably more than any other game that I have played on the system, which admittedly isn't a whole bunch, but it uses everything that the Wii U can do. It utilizes the rumble aspect of the gamepad. It uses the camera, the selfie camera that's attached to it that you're supposed to use the Wii wand with.
Mm-hmm.
The gamepad talks to you separately from the game's soundtrack. Basically, all the interactions that are done require the gamepad and the TV screen in equal measure. So there's a little kind of a smiley face, or it's kind of a blank face, but it's in the middle of the gamepad. And as you cross certain things, the face lights up and you tap it with the stylus, and then you get to like hear the thoughts of your particular character at that moment. And it kind of gives you hints as to what to do, but sometimes it's just character building, which is kind of cool. And yeah, the face will tell you how the character's feeling, and you know, you'll get your requisite warnings and all this other stuff, and like, you know, learn the goals and everything. And then sometimes one of my favorite ones actually was to where there's a puzzle right near the beginning, and it's actually used all throughout the game, where you hang on, my cat got caught up on my mouse cable.
Been there.
He just walked across it and it tripped him, and I pulled he like turned over pathetically, and I took the cable back and he ran away. He thought it attacked him. Sorry.
Help me.
Wilfred's so pathetic. Where was I? I was talking about my favorite puzzle. Well, it's one of my favorite examples of how much care was done in this game. And it's to where, there's like a fan, and it has to like blow you to a higher level. And in order to get it to blow, while you're standing on it, you have to click connect and then actually blow on your gamepad, and the microphone picks it up and blows your character. So it's kind of cool, things like that. Now, as far as my only real complaints about the game, the implementation of some of the puzzle aspects, while like really well thought out, are hard to execute in the amount of time the game gives you to do so. So like, and plus some things are just a little unnecessarily in the way. For instance, you have to click connect before you blow into the gamepad. So it's like you're going over multiple platforms with multiple fans, and you have a very limited amount of time, and you have to click connect every time. And so you have to look at your gamepad, click connect, look up at the screen, blow into it, control your character, look back at the gamepad, and you know, et cetera.
Mm.
Whereas it felt more like you could have just done away with the connect button and just known to blow into your controller, like WarioWare style, you know? And then there's one puzzle actually in the second chapter that I was not able to complete because it required pointing the gamepad camera at something colored like either red, blue, or green. I could not get that camera to figure out anything that was red, blue, or green. And I have Sega CD games and Sega Genesis games. I have red and blue stuff. But yeah, it's like it kept not understanding. Like the colors would get washed out by whatever light source I tried to use. So it's kind of like, it felt more like a limitation of the Wii Pad's camera than of the actual game. But I felt like the game could have been more forgiving because I kind of got stuck at that point. It's like I couldn't figure out what this gamepad wants that's green, because I tried every green thing.
No.
Yeah, so I was like, this is cool. And maybe other people with better lit apartments would have more luck. But I didn't have very much luck in Fluorescent Town over here.
Fluorescent Town.
Yeah. And the third chapter, actually, it's what is interesting about it is that the first whole chapter is basically like a steady building tutorial where they keep implementing new ideas and new puzzles, and like you kind of learn how to read the room. The room's, by the way, beautifully decorated. Like the art style is fantastic in this game. The pixel characters look kind of like, you know, Quest of Dungeons kind of characters, but the backgrounds, like the third stage, looks like crumpled up notebook paper, like that you're moving around in that. And it like looked really realistic, and like you could see like outlines of things that were sketched out on the paper and stuff like that. And I was very charmed by that. Anyway, but then like, you know, it's the first one, the first chapter, like kind of introduces all the puzzles. The second one is more of like a point and click adventure. Like you have to find items and then use those items to find other items and then solve the puzzles. And like I said, I got stopped on that one because I had to find the colors. And then the third one actually puts the two together, especially it's basically like a speed run version of the first game. Like you have to utilize all the puzzles, but you have to do it really quickly because those, security flowers that can steal away your mask are like going on like, they're going full blast. So that one was really hard, but it's basically, sorry, my cat's attacking everything over here.
I'm so glad it's finally not my cat breaking everything.
I know. He's like, he hears me talk, but I'm not talking to him. So I think that's what it is. Anywho's. But yeah, the third one basically has you like testing the limits of how fast you can solve puzzles and like how fast you can use the Wii controllers, which it can be frustrating, but I think it's doable. I was certainly able to do things I didn't think I could. So
nice. So I guess the big question is, for $4, what are your thoughts on this game?
For $4, I think that it is definitely worth picking up. It's clear a lot of effort went into this game. And, you know, the complaints I have about it, it's nothing compared to puzzle games from, like, the 8, even on through the 32-bit era, you know? Yeah. It's really interesting usage of the Wii U controller. It'll definitely have you racking your brain. It'll have you threatening to throw that thing across the room, despite the expense. But, I mean, if that's your kind of thing, if you like to be really challenged by puzzles and things like that, it's a worthwhile pickup.
Nice. And then even cooler is, I believe, through the end of the month and a little bit into November, it's on sale for 97 cents.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, dang, that's pretty good.
So I guess if you have a Wii U, just buy the fucking game for a dollar. Seriously, come on, people. What else are you using the Wii U for?
Yeah, come on. Just do it. These people should be making more games, so support them.
Indeed. They spent, God, how long? Because we first covered this when the first episode released last year. And it's been so long that, like, I don't even have a Wii U anymore. So I couldn't continue the review.
I am getting so much enjoyment out of my Wii U now that I've transferred my old virtual console titles to it. And now I have these snazzy SNES classic controllers that work really well on those classic games.
Oh, yeah, they do work on there.
They do, and they're very good. So, Wii and Wii U owners, you need to be dusting those things back off, because they still have, like, exclusives in the eShop.
Yeah, with the virtual console stuff.
Yeah, like, the Wii U's catching up to the Wii's old library, and the Wii's old library still has, like, these awesome, like, imports and unique stuff, and Turbo CD stuff, which hasn't been put on the Wii U yet. So, it's like, you've only got until 2019 to stock up.
Only, yeah.
To get, what, Lords of Thunder on the Turbo CD, like, pretty much pitch perfect for, what, $9?
Something like that. Like, is there still even anywhere that sells the Nintendo point cards?
Oh, I don't even know. I know you can just put your credit card into the machine and it'll work.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, yeah, good stuff.
Three Souls, good stuff.
Indeed.
And I somehow avoided saying Dark Souls. Oh, no, I did it. Oh, no. I'm a hack for sure. I deserve only the worst.
Well, Chris, thank you as always for coming on and talking about the game. I know you will be back on again very, very soon.
Oh, yes.
any final thoughts to sum things up?
The Wii U is great. Everybody should play it and download TurboGrafx stuff so that they'll bring it to the Switch.
All right, moving on. Two more games to talk about. We're bringing in our good friend Tom Miller. Tom, how are you doing today, sir?
Oh, things are going all right. Nothing's on fire. I can breathe.
Oh, my God. Thank God. I didn't want to ask and jinx it, but you brought it up. No. So if nothing's on fire, you're slacking. What the hell's going on, man?
My arson career is coming to a close.
It's been a good career, but, you know, sometimes you just have to know when to hang it up, and I've burned enough shit to last me a lifetime.
You know, so. I had a good run.
Countless lives were lost at my hands, and I feel good about that. But, you're here to talk about two games. Let's start with the game Alteric, developed by Goon Swarm, published by Sometimes You. It released October 10th on PS4 and Vita for $4.99. You are alone. Are you lonely? You're lost or stuck? Somewhere, but where? And most importantly, who are you? Only yesterday you were a man. Today everything has changed. You died, but your soul is still there. It's a piece of light energy trapped in an alien space between two worlds. Tom, what the hell does any of that mean?
This is that's like a pretty complicated way to describe a very simple game. It's some pretty epic copy going on there, but
that's a hell of a description. Like, they get points for that alone.
Oh, totally, yeah. This is a really simple platformer, though. It is, it's on PS4. It's actually also on Steam. But it's one of those, minimalistic and masochistic platformer games where it's really just you and you're playing as, I guess it's a condensation of an immortal soul, but it kind of manifests as a square, which is cool. So the main gimmick of this game and what sets it apart from a lot of other games of the style is that you have the ability to switch your soul between two different worlds, two different layers. And each one has its own sets of obstacles. So you can do that at any time, and it gives it sort of like a, you know, I want to compare it to if you've ever played the game Eversion. It's like a really sort of a simpler and less horrifying version of that, where you can switch between different layers of reality. So that's pretty cool. I like that that idea for a gimmick, and I'm also a fan. The whole thing has like this really minimalistic style. All the backgrounds are just silhouettes, and there are some cool patterns going on in the background, but it's all very bold and simple. It's very cool.
Visually, it reminded me a lot, even in their description, it reminds me a lot of Thomas Was Alone.
Yeah, I've heard it compared a lot to that, which actually is one of those games that I've always needed to play. And
you should. It's like Alteric, but not ball-crushingly hard.
Yeah, so that's the other part of it. I was going to rename this game Salteric, which... which I thought of moments before we started the call.
I'm so glad that you made sure to include that.
This game is incredibly difficult. Even though it is a pretty short game at only three worlds, I don't think either of us was able to get past the second one.
No, shit gets hard in this game. Like, we mentioned the Thomas thing on the PlayStation Store. It says, according to the developers, quote, "We tried to develop a game in such a way that the player realized, here, Thomas meets with Dark Souls."
Yeah.
And, you know, they have the Thomas Was Alone comparison with the visuals and the play style of the 2D puzzle platformer. And then they have the Dark Souls part with the fuck you difficulty.
Yeah, the Steam page for this game actually has one of the descriptive bullets as roast your ass gameplay. And it definitely it delivers on that, I will tell you what. I guess
roast your ass gameplay.
the one thing I would say is that like sometimes it doesn't the difficulty of it feels a little bit unfair. Like when you're moving around, your character does have a bit more momentum than I would like that led to me a couple of times just like kind of walking into spikes when I didn't mean to. And also it was, sometimes there's not really a visual cue when you're switching in between layers of like when there is or isn't going to be a platform there. So a lot of the time it's hard to tell, like, is this just going to immediately kill me or not? So, I mean, I think it does have some tweaking that can be done. These are kind of big things, I think, for a platformer, but I do really like the aesthetic of it for sure.
I know some of my issues with the game, aside from the difficulty, because difficulty is always, you know, an acquired taste or an objective kind of thing. I had issues with some of the control in the game. I felt like, I don't know, it felt like some of the jumps, I would feel like I was landing them right, but I would just be way off course of where I thought I was. Mm-hmm. And then just because of the whole plane shifting kind of deal, there were a lot of times where it was a lot of trial and error of like, oh, well, I got a jump here. Oh, I guess I should have switched. Oh, I guess I should have switched like 3 seconds ago when the platform was all the way up there.
Yeah, right.
It felt like a lot of trial and error and trying to figure out what you had to do. And in a game that has a, like trophies in it that are like beat this world or this stage without dying, that's kind of mean.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. You do kind of need to have some idea of what's coming up next. So I don't know. That was definitely a legit complaint that I had with it. I don't know. I think that it is a very cheap game. It's $5 on PS4 and actually $4 on Steam. So, it might be worth a look if you're interested in just getting demoralized. I don't know if it's really my thing, but, I definitely, take a look. It is very cheap. And, if you're in the mood for a balls hard platformer, you could definitely do worse.
Very true. This is why I enacted the whole fuck it, why not review scale.
Yeah.
Because a game this cheap, you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to give you a hard time, but it's cheap enough and it's fun enough that fuck it, why not? It's only $5.
Yeah.
Then comes the big question. What platform would you go on? Would you go on Steam for this? Would you go with PS4? Or my thinking is that $5, this might be a great Vita game for portability.
Yeah, that might actually, I actually just found out, when you mentioned it, before we started recording that this had a Vita port as well. That might be a good way to go. Honestly, it's a good game and it auto saves between every level. So it is a game that you can just pick up and play for a few minutes if you want as well.
Nice. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, other game that you're here to talk about is called Bomber Crew, developed by Runner Duck, published by Curve Digital, released October 19th on Steam for $14.99. Chocks away, Bomber Crew is a strategic simulation game where picking the right crew and keeping your bomber in tip-top shape is the difference between completing your magician. What the fuck? completing your mission or losing it all. Why did my brain say magician?
I have no idea, but
that's too stupid to edit out.
It was entertaining. I don't know.
So, Tom, tell me about the bombing magicians.
The bombing magician. Oh wait, there's a here. Hang on, I'm gonna close my window. There's a truck backing up somewhere in my neighborhood, and beep, I know my mic's gonna pick beep, that up.
Beep, yeah. Beep.
Like I can barely hear it, but I know it's probably deafening. So yeah, Bomber Crew. So this game, you take control of the entire crew of like this World War II era bomber jet, or you have different jets that you can get over the course of the game. And then you take on missions. You do stuff like going on bombing raids. You do recon sometimes, drop supplies, take down other enemy jets. And really the game that immediately comes to mind with this is, I know you said you hadn't played it when I brought it up once a while ago, but FTL, which is a game where you control the crew of a spaceship and are trying to, do other missions with that. But it really focuses a lot on crew management. So you have, different people who take on different positions. Like you have a pilot, a navigator, engineers, gunners, and, are kind of trying to get them to move around the plane and to kind of make everything work as a functional unit. So the first thing, this game is really, I don't know, it's just a fun game to look at. Like, it's not like a stunningly beautiful game, but everything just has this like really bold colors. It has like, there's really like a sense of humor to the designs. It has really a cartoony thing going on. And it's all, everything is blocky, but it looks like it should be that way.
Which I dig in a sim game. You don't see many sim games with a more stylized caricature cartoonish visuals. It's usually like super hyper realistic and
yeah, and especially for like a World War II thing, to get like, you know, something that is this like brightly colored is a really nice change of pace. And so your characters are all like cartoon people, and they're like, you can have them like wear sweater vests as they're doing these missions, which is kind of funny, I think. Yeah, so definitely has a sense of humor. And so the gameplay, as I mentioned, it has a lot to do with crew management. So it gets pretty hectic as you're going on, because you're constantly trying to like patch up holes as they happen, fix systems, and you know, as people get hurt, you have to like send first aid over to them. But then you have to take somebody from, you know, one of your other stations to do that. And it's just like this constant like multitasking dance. And it's actually, it feels really rewarding when you have like, when you're getting attacked by multiple enemy ships and you have to like bomb a base and also like have navigation going on. And it gets pretty hectic sometimes. And when you are, when you do manage to make it through a rough patch like that, it really does feel rewarding. And I guess the only complaint I'd really have about it is that sometimes the menu, the UI, does get a little bit maybe more complicated than it needs to be. Like for every crew member you click on, it brings up like an entire different interface, basically. So there's a lot of sort of like clicking around and trying to do stuff and just like trying to figure out what button you need to press to do this really simple thing. It is really fun to manage to make your way through all these difficulties, though. Yeah, there were just a couple things, like your characters, for being like in a war zone and having to like give first aid to somebody whose survival is necessary for the mission, move really, really slowly in the plane. You like click it and it's like, oh, I'm gonna walk really slowly over to, you know, heal this guy who's bleeding out 10 feet away from me.
take your time. Nothing important. Yeah.
So I don't know. That does kind of make
this fucking guy dying again.
God, again with the gunshot wound. Come on.
Sign up for this shit.
So that does kind of make it a little bit more stressful than maybe it needs to be. And also, it does get a little bit repetitive. And I've heard, especially for people who have really gotten into the late game, like after a while, the objectives do just kind of start to repeat. And, I noticed that even in the slightly shorter time that I was playing the game, it is just kind of like, okay, go to this point, bomb this factory, you know. Oh, the missions all do have kind of a similar structure to them. But it is a really cool, like, it's a unique take on like World War II flying games. And, you know, I was kind of going into it expecting more of like, not like Ace Combat, but like a little bit more of an arcade thing. And what happened was more of a simulation, and it wound up being really cool in its own way.
Nice.
Yeah.
So yeah. I guess for $15, what are your thoughts on this one?
So I'd say if you're looking for like a super fast paced, like dogfighting combat game, you might not be too into it. But if you're more interested in like the simulation and the micromanagement aspects of it, I think it's really fun. Especially if you're a fan of something like FTL. You know, even though I did say, it gets repetitive, it does have some replay value, and you get new crew members as you go on and new planes, and there is quite a bit to do. So I would say it's worth it. And right now, until October 26th, it is on sale for $12.74 on Steam as well.
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah, it's 15% off, and I think that is definitely worthwhile.
Sounds good. So it seems like as long as you pick this up by the 26th for $12.74, it's a very worthwhile purchase.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining and talking about these two games. I know you'll be back on the show shortly. Do you have any final words or truck beeps or fires to start?
As usual, no, I have no idea what I could possibly say. So, awkward silence.
All right, and finally tonight, last game to talk about is called Brawlhalla, developed and published by Blue Mammoth Games. It released October 17th on Steam and PS4 as a free-to-play game with various character packs for purchase. Brawlhalla is an epic platform fighter for up to 8 players online or locally, and it's free. Join casual free-for-alls, queue for rank matches, or make a custom room with your friends, millions of players, frequent updates, over 30 unique legends. Come fight for glory in the halls of Valhalla. We have our fighting game expert, Wood, covering this one. Wood, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm an expert now.
You're the expert. I mean, come on. You do commentary for Street Fighter matches.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I do. I guess I know what I'm talking about.
You do. You're the fighting game guy. Fighting yes, game yes, and, like, PC horror.
Yep, that's me. That's me to heat tea. Yeah, that's pretty much all I do. It's just horror and fighting games, pretty much.
And cursing at both games equally on Twitch.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And the salt. The salt is a pillar, sir. How much, like, skewed.
So good. So good. I love watching you stream. It feels like every time that I go onto Twitch and I see friends streaming and I see you, I could click on it and within 60 seconds, there will be at least one time of you going, come the fuck on, game, you fucking pizza. What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Oh, yeah. You saw my Cuphead playthrough. Oh, yeah. It's, you know, honestly, like, when it comes to this game, I'm, for some reason, I was just able to chill out for it, and it's, I might as well get into it. So, Brawlhalla, let's put it out there. It's a platform brawler, very much in the same vein as, like, the Smash series, right? Mm-hmm. It does a number of things very differently. One of them is all the characters. You notice the animations are very similar, and the big differentiator between a lot of the characters is actually just what weapons they come with. That's the reason why they have, like, 30 characters. Is they all come with, like, some combination of weapons. So, and a lot of them get shared, right? So there's a whole bunch of guys who have hammers. There's a whole bunch of guys who have swords. But the big difference is what combination they have. And also, like, what their little bit of stats are, which, man, it was hard to tell. Like, I see these bars for what their stats are, and it's really hard to really see that in game, like, how it plays out as far as animation wise. So one of the big differences, like I said, is just the characters are very similar as far as, like, both. I wouldn't say just aesthetics, but, like, build wise, they're all the same exact size, and animations are shared between the weapons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's some mechanics that's a little different. Like, they all have, like, a wall grab sort of thing, like where only certain characters in Smash could actually do the wall cling, where you slowly slide down. Every character can actually do that.
Hmm.
Everyone has an 8-way dodge. There's all that stuff. There's light attacks, tilt attacks, and also your little smash attacks. The other big difference is no blocking. There's no blocking in this game.
Interesting. Because when I play those kinds of games, fighting games in general, like, I never block. I'm terrible at it. When I play fighting games, when I play, like, side-scrolling brawlers, like, I'm always on the offensive instead of, like, trying to play defensively and learn to block and parry and dodge roll and all this other stuff. Like, I'm terrible at it, so I don't try.
Oh gosh. No, that's what gets you good at fighting games. Like, it's, like, honestly, like, real talk. Like, the biggest thing, this is true for, like fighting games and also, like, any martial arts. Like, learning to defend is, like, the most important part, right? But that's the difference between, like, melee, because melee, you, or brawl in general, right? You have that block function. So you also have to have, like, throws in order to break that. So you have that little triangle going on. That's not the case in Brawlhalla. So your offense or your defense is usually either a good offense or positioning. Like, there's a term in fighting games called footsies, which is basically knowing it has a whole bunch of different, like, definitions. But I like the definition of, like, knowing where your attack differences or your attack distances are and dancing in and out of that in order to bait a whiff, which you then can punish, right?
Gotcha.
So they also refer to that as the neutral, which is, like, there's, you know, you're both at a standing distance. You haven't hit each other yet, or maybe you have hit each other again, but you're trying to jockey for position in order to get that hit in, right? And that is all Brawlhalla is. It is all footsies, no defense. It kind of gets nutty because of that. So, and part of, it's what I find interesting about that aspect of it. As soon as I got used to that, like, I quickly got really used to, you know, the footsie game, the neutral, because it's, I don't know, because it's there's what I'm used to in other fighting games, and it just came naturally to me. Yeah, and that's part of the fun of it. Also, you got to keep in mind, like, because there's no defense, there's no throws. So that's a whole aspect of the game you don't even have to worry about. Like, when someone's, like, rushing you down, is you just either, like, accept it, dodge out of the way, or counterattack whichever way you want. So this is, honestly, if you're, like, blocking in video games, this is right up your alley. It honestly is, because, like, you're using your movement. You're using your movement to do everything in the game. So that part is very interesting. And also, the characters have, like, various stats, but it really does come down to what weapons you use, because they all have different animations and different properties and different recoveries and different. They're so different with the different weapon types. Even though they share the same animations between characters, they're vastly different between each other.
In what way?
That makes any sense. Okay, so, like, the guy I was using was Roland the Knight, right? So Roland actually has a sword and a what's called a I think it's a rocket lance. So part of it is like it's a rocket powered lance is really what it comes down to. So both between those two weapons, he has vastly different animations. So like if I just do my standing heavy with a sword, he does just like this like upward attack with a sword. Whereas with the rocket lance, he actually does this jump up horse thing. That while it covers the same area, it's a different animation altogether, and also has different startup and all this other stuff. So it's a different animation altogether. And also the new character release, they also released a new weapon type called she carries a freaking cannon. Right. And the cool part about the cannon, and also the bad part about the cannon, is like it boosts her mobility a lot. The problem is like, if you ever played like Fox in like the Smash games, and you accidentally do your special moves in the wrong direction, is like, oh, I can't recover anymore, and I'm off ledge. Well, shit, that happens, right? So, like, I mean, that's where the differences become, is it's the different weapon types and different characters do bring different animation, different properties, so on and so forth. So it's actually a very deep game as far as like knowing what the properties are. And the other thing I appreciate is the fact that the games are slow enough. So if you're really unfamiliar with the character's move animation, like your opponent's move animation with their weapons, you'll learn. Because it's not just like, it's not a one-hit kill game. They have to, it's the same rules as Smash, which is you have to build someone's damage up so they launch further and further until you actually, you know, get the knockout on them.
Gotcha. All right.
So it's the same, so it's the same rules. But it's a very interesting way that they've done it. So it's basically what I feel like they've done is like made a very simple game by completely removing an aspect of the game you don't have to worry about and making everyone like pretty similar in size, right? So the character sprites, they look different. They're the same size compared to each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you essentially have the same hitboxes, the same hurtboxes, so on and so forth. And yeah, you're really picking your character based on what weapons you want to use. So some characters like, hey, I really like bows. So that locks you down to all your characters that have a bow in their setup. Because like the way the game works is you start off with no weapons. So everyone has the same exact moves without weapons. So you punch, you have a dive kick, you have an uppercut. Everyone has the same exact moveset without a weapon. But what you'll see is like these icons come down where it looks like laser swords that just kind of pop out of the ground. And once you pick that up, that's your weapon. And it goes in the same order of like what your primary weapon is and your secondary weapon. Whenever you drop, like throw your weapon away or whatever you do when you pick up a new one, it goes to your next weapon. So right. some characters like it's like, there's some like samurai guy who starts off with the katana and then he has a bow. And you're saying, hey, you know, I'm not that great at a katana, so I'm going to use the katana just to get some hits in. But as soon as the second weapon is dropped, I'm going to throw it out away, pick this up, and I'm going to just mollywop you because I'm really good with bows.
Oh, man. So I'm guessing this leads to more fast-paced and high-action games instead of more defensive, slower games.
Absolutely. Like, it is, everyone's jockeying for position, and everybody's moving, and everyone's, you know, everyone's trying to land their hits. So there's a lot of movement, and yeah, movement is the key thing to this game. And also, like, once the Because it's, you got the weapons to drop. You also have bombs, mines, and morning stars, which are for the most part single use. The morning star you can actually throw over and over again for a brief moment. But you drop your weapon at the same time to pick those up. So it's, you got to start making some trade-offs in there. So this isn't a, oh, we turned all items off, Final Destination, Fox only. but because your items are just those four, essentially, that it becomes part of the strategy. And like, all right, how do I do this, right? Or it's a, you got an opponent who's like I've done this before in some ranked matches where I just camp around like the weapon. When they're unarmed, they're just like, well, shoot, this sucks. Oh, wait, there's a Morningstar here. I can just throw this at them and then either hit them or move them out of the way so I can pick up the weapon. And we're back to, you know, a more traditional fighting game at that point.
Yeah. Well, so, I got to know, because this is a free-to-play game. There isn't really any kind of, like, verdict on, oh, you should buy it. But I'm curious to know, what about it is the free-to-play? Like, how are characters handled? What are you paying for when it comes to real money transactions? How does all that stuff work?
Okay, so so the heroes themselves, you can actually just, if I looked at it right, because it's the review copy you gave me essentially is all the heroes' base, plus a bunch of coins. So you pay for the mammoth coins, which you then spend on either heroes or you're paying for skins for the most part. So everyone has about like 4 to 5 skins or something like that. Some of the newer characters only have 3 extra ones. So a lot of your money goes towards the skins, but you can actually earn the heroes just by, or legends, they call them in this game. You can earn the legends just by playing.
Well, that's cool.
And there's, yeah, and there is a free rotation in there, which is good because, you don't have to pay for anything. You can actually just pop in there, start playing some of the heroes and like, or some legends like, hey man, I really like this legend. I might have to keep them on my roster or like, I don't like this rotation this week. Let me wait till next week for the next rotation. And hopefully there's some combination of weapons I like better than, you know, these guys.
Or if you want, you could just buy all of them.
Or you can just buy all of them. And it's pretty inexpensive if I looked at it correctly. Like, there's no way I'm going to play all 30 legends. This is not happening. it's, well, because, like, you know, it's, the thing is, like, there was an argument about when Marvel's coming out. People were talking about, like, oh, people are okay with other characters that function as their favorites. And the reality is, no. There's a little bit more to character selection than just, you know, hey, he can do a dive kick, so I'm going to get a dive kick. No. It comes down to how they look. So, of course, I'm going to play the freaking knight dude. And I'm going to play with the chick with a fucking cannon. Because why would I play anything else?
True.
Right.
Looking it up, it looks like the All Legends pack is only $20. So if you were the one giving, well, you are the one giving the recommendation, would you stick with the free-to-play pack? Would you spend some money on the All Legends pack? Would you buy a coin pack to buy any kind of cosmetics? What is your recommendation with this game?
Honestly, so it's really hard to recommend buying a coin pack for the aesthetics. Because reality is, like, aesthetically, it still kind of looks like a Flash game. Which is, I hate to say it, it does, right? Really well-made Flash game. But it still has that aesthetic. I mean, some of the costumes do look freaking boss. I'm not going to lie. But if you had to drop $20 on the All Legends pack, I don't think you'd be disappointed. Because the other thing I forgot to mention, the netcode's stupid good. The netcode, like, this is, like, I started plopping down and playing, and I had not have a single bad connection playing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think part of it is because it's a free-to-play model, it's super easy to just jump in with no preconceived notions or anything like that, about that, and no real commitment. You just pop in, it's like, let me just try this game out. And it's just fun. And that's the biggest thing I say about this game. It's like, it's fun. Like, I had a blast playing this game.
Which is what games should be. It should just be fun and enjoyable.
Yeah. I mean, like, is there going to be some frustrations? Yeah, of course there is. Like, I have some bullshit deaths. It happens. But but that's the thing. It's just, this is an easy game to, like, if you just want to waste like 30 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever it takes to just like pop in a couple games, you can totally do that. You can do that with the with the free to play model, or you can just like plop into $20 and say, hey, you know, let me peruse the legends at my own pace instead of waiting for the free to play ones come up. You're not going to be disappointed.
Nice.
So I don't think you're going to be disappointed.
It sounds like whether you have money to spend or not, it is at the very least worth grabbing this game and playing it.
Absolutely. Nice. Absolutely. Dude, I might be playing a little bit tonight. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. Because it's just fun.
Yeah. And that's what we need more with games. It's just fun. Goofy fun that you could just zone out and play and smile and have fun.
Yeah, honestly, here's the thing. Like, I think this is actually a better party game than Smash.
Ooh.
Honestly, I know it's, but that's
throwing
the thing.
Down the gauntlet.
Like, I'm throwing the gauntlet because like there's a difference between like, you know, there's this fun Smash, and then there's the competitive Smash, and competitive Smash is fucking scary shit, right? That's the I got a wave dash so goddamn hard my wrists explode. I wish I was making that thing up, actually. There are some Smash Pros that have surgeries on their wrists because they fucked up so bad from the GameCube controllers. Oh my lord,
that is insane.
Yeah. Meanwhile, this is a game where, like, I was just watching some of the last year's World Championships, right? Because there's money to be had in, like, esports for Brawlhalla, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I appreciate is, one, it's any control scheme works. There's a guy playing on a fucking keyboard.
Nice.
Yeah. So you don't need the analog controls to play. You just use, it's all digital. And that's exactly what I was using for the PS4 version, was the D-pad of everything. And the big thing is the gameplay itself doesn't change dramatically between your low B, I'm just going to mash buttons and hope it works, to your competitive high end. Because it's a game of movement.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the big difference, right? It's like, this is about movement and mind games and getting in your opponent's head and know where they're going, right? So, and that's the thing I like about it, where it's, you have this goal of like, I've already given up on like trying to get good enough at Brawl. Or, excuse me, not Brawl, excuse me. There's just no one fucking plays Brawl. That game's garbage, right? But like Smash 4 or Melee, right? Smash 4 is the easier of the two. But I am not willing to invest the time to get good at that game because I don't care. I'd rather just like have fun with that. Whereas Brawlhalla, on the other hand, because there's enough, the skill ceiling is still really high, but the bar of entry is so low that I can actually see myself getting really good at this game. Nice. Because like because I want to get the time, get used to my characters and so on and so forth to play very well, and that's the thing, and it's not going to cause my wrist to fucking explode.
Well, I look forward to you winning all of the championships, and if you don't win them, at least commentating them.
Oh man, I would love to. Oh my gosh, because I'm pretty sure I'm better than these guys any day.
Maybe
free. Shit's free.
But Wood, thank you so much for checking this one out for us. Again, it is on Steam and PS4 as a free to play game. Really, really, really hope this hits some other platforms, because I would love to get my hands on this. And it's on the two platforms I don't give a shit about. So.
Well, yeah, no, one of them's like stupid expensive. The other one's trying to kill you. So
yeah. But that is it for this episode. Wood, thanks for dropping by and chatting about Brawlhalla. Thanks to everyone else for coming on and covering games. And I don't know, I guess that's it. Wood, do you have any final words to end the show?
Better to Melee, 7-4 matchup, 7-3 matchup. Oh my god, I can't math.